Good Morning Football is a production of the NFL in partnership with iHeartRadio.
This is delicious, by the way. It's caramel frappe, isn't it? I've had this before.
And on that note, Good Morning Football podcast. Nate caught in the act drinking your double milkshake situation. Hi, Nate.
How you doing, Kay?
Oh, hey, hi.
No, wait, Nate, that's delicious. It looks terrible. Where'd you get that, Dairy Queen? That's incredible.
It's fantastic. You, what do you have, a Coke Zero over there?
Yeah, it's
every
new year,
time
new
at this time.
New year, new me. I'm trying to cut out everything. I got to lose.
Did you say new year, new...
Yeah.
Hi, Peter Schrager.
Is that your new resolution?
Yeah. No, no,
is that a belching noise on the podcast?
I hate when people say that.
Hey, Kay, it's Peter Schrager here from across
hi.
The table. How are you guys?
I'm wonderful.
Happy New Year, guys.
Happy New Year.
Merry
we got
new
to
year.
Hang out a little bit last week.
A lot of it.
At a table. With some cocktails, not any milkshakes. It right. was good to see you guys outside of work a little bit.
We treated ourselves. We said, you know what? Let's go out one night. Just us. No producers. No podcast
engineers. On a school night.
Let's go out. And we went out on Thursday night.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And Nate, I had a good time.
I had a great time. Kay, you were there first.
Mm-hmm.
And then you text just B-A-R with exclamation points.
Yeah.
Like, I'm here. And then we showed up. And then we sat down. The food was fantastic. And the vibe was good. I brought... my little brother, brother-in-law, Joey, who came over from overseas, he plays basketball in France professionally. He was knocked out, like he had narcolepsy. Around, well, I don't know what time
that
it was.
That was it, narcolepsy. And that's, I remember talking, that's why he was knocked out.
Talking, you know, it was too much, sauce. That's what right. it was. And I remember the next day, you guys was like so concerned, like, hey, is your brother okay? I've never seen that before. He was sitting so still.
I was like, I see that all the time.
Nobody had a better time than you, Nate. At one point, we were debating dessert or something, and you were trying to tell me in your own words, with the black people like a certain type of dessert.
I said, black people don't like dark, dark chocolate desserts.
Right. And I thought you were making a joke because you like to make those jokes.
Yeah.
Only for you to get up from the table, who find another black
find
gentleman.
Find the one
at the
other
next
black
table.
Man in the building.
Yes, and say, hey, man,
you
how did that
him,
conversation
you went up to
go?
Him,
yes.
And you bugged him.
I walked to him. I was like, hey, man, listen, I don't mean to bother you, which means I'm about to bother you. He's looking up at like,
he's on a date with a girl, like at a nice restaurant.
Yeah. Yes. He's like, about to propose, actually. He ruined it.
I was like, so let me ask you this. If you're going to choose a dessert, would you select a dark chocolate peanut butter dessert over some type of fruit dessert, like
cobbler.
A strawberry or cobbler or something? And he's like, well, I like peanut butter. And I was like, okay, what about the dark chocolate? He's like, I don't really do dark chocolate. And I look back at you guys like, see? Black people don't like dark chocolate. Now, obviously,
I didn't even remember this happening.
I had too much sauce.
Remember
right?
when Nate was up
I
for a
do
while?
Feel like most of the black people I know don't like the deep, deep, dark, dark chocolate.
Why?
A lot of my white friends, they like that's the first thing they go to.
It's ironic,
dessert.
Right?
It's yeah. It's like, oh, I want the dark chocolate, like with peanut butter dessert.
Yeah,
you always go for like a fruit situation. I feel like right.
I do.
Like
I love
strawberry
I love
cake sort
strawberry
of thing. I feel like I've had
cobblers.
That with you.
Obviously, it's an extreme stereotype, but it's a fun one. I like to deal with the fun stereotypes instead of the ones that hurt people feel.
So we did that on Thursday. Got to the show Friday, had a great show. There was no mention except for a tequila mention by Kyle Brandt on live television.
You would have never known we were out.
You would have never known because we didn't post about it, which is a perfect segue into this giant situation that is hitting the New York market and media and back pages by storm when you have guys like Victor Cruz, Odell Beckham Jr., Sterling Shepard flying down to Miami to kick it with Biebs and Trey Songz of all people and then be all over Snapchat about it. So we kind of talked about it on the show, but I thought we could unload it a little bit more here.
Right.
Nate, you're all for it.
I'm all about it. And Kyle kind of mentioned something earlier when he said there was the boat cruise that happened in Minnesota. And there were two boats, and I was on the second boat.
The love boats.
The love boats. Yes. And if you don't know what happened, Google it. It was some people that got in trouble. There were some things that were going on that shouldn't have went on the boats. Now, I was one of those guys that didn't get in trouble. And I kind of tried to hover around the young guys and take care of them that night. So I stayed out of the fray. I just feel like if you have the ability, you have the means, and you can keep yourself out of trouble, you can party as much as you want. What people don't understand about this job is that it is easily, in my opinion, one of the most highly stressful jobs. So anytime you get to not only break up the monotony, but the constant flow of stress being thrown your way. And I'm not just talking about from family and fans. I'm talking about physical, mental anguish that you go through. If there's a small window and coach is like, hey, guys, great win. You got a day and a half. See you in a little bit. Most guys will go home if they have family, spend their families. Guys that are from the city, maybe go out in the city in New York. There's a lot to do. Young guys who have the world in the palm of their hands and probably have, you know, private planes that fly them from location to location, like – Victor Cruz, Odell Beckham, and young guy Sterling Shepard, who's basically just going to follow the lead of the OGs on his team. Why not go to Miami and kick it on a boat and get out of this cold weather?
It might even help
and
that.
Rejuvenate yourself. Yeah. Like, man, I needed this. I needed a break. Kay, you grind more than anybody I know.
Amen.
And but I also could party more than anybody that you know, and you just don't know about it because I'm smart enough to not put it out there.
For sure. But I think there is times that you probably sit back and say, man,
I know
that's not what she's saying.
She's saying that, why did we know about it? Why are they taking Snapchats? Why, though?
That's
why?
What they do. That's the way they live their lives. That's the generational thing. That's 24 years old. Odell Beckham, one of the older guys, I mean, Cruz is older, but he's 24. That's what you do. It's almost like, you know, I got younger siblings and stuff. Everything's documented. And I know this is the ultimate millennial, I sound like an old guy thing. Everything. Nate's got his phone going right there, and he's not even part of that. Obviously, I'm sitting here going, go have fun. I agree with Kay. Why would you take the stupid pictures? Put the phone down, then you got no issue. They can't. That's part of their life. That is their extension of their hand. Everything is documented and shared, or it's not worth doing. I hate it, but that's how they roll.
Triggs, you're from here.
It's hard, man. This is a societal thing.
This media market and these fans.
That's the thing. It's an older fan base, right? I know there's a lot of young Giant fans listening who are like, wait a second. But you look at the media corps in New York. It's the Gary Myers. It's the Steve Serbys.
Sure.
Frank Isola. I mean, those are guys that have been in this industry for 30 years, and they've covered Phil Simms to Eli Manning to Odell Beckham. And no, the players shouldn't worry about the media or the fan base, but the Giants, I think of John Mara. I think of, you know, the Wellington Mara, the Duke, all this history and tradition and them being a class organization. So I feel Nate rolling his eyes, but my thing is this. You know that the fan base expects one thing, so don't be surprised when there's a backlash this week, and do not be surprised, and don't play the woe is me if you drop three balls and you hear about it for the entire offseason.
Do you think that they have to know this, right, Nate, and they just don't care, right? And maybe they welcome it as something that they can use. Like, oh, you think we're going to do bad, but we're going to have our cake and eat it too.
I don't think they welcome it as something they're going to use as motivation. I think KB hit it dead on. It's what they do. It's who they are. It's how they live their lives. Everything is documented. Now, I'm 35, so I came in an era where, you know, if you're going to do something, especially something that is frowned upon or something that you might not want the masses to know, then you don't document it. That's just how it is. These young guys, they're not just football players. Odell is a rock star. And what makes rock stars popular is that everything is documented. The reason we know about our favorite actors and actresses and singers and rappers is because they document everything. So I think it's less about football. It's more about brand building. Yeah, they could have went and party on the boat. Nobody knew it. But you know how cool they look to the younger generation of kids? I didn't know about it until I walked in. So that shows you how detached I am from these younger guys. But there's a young generation that follow every single move. And they're sitting there waiting, thinking, oh, my gosh, he's the coolest guy ever. And that young kid will buy his jersey, buy tickets, support him for the rest of his career. So KB says his document is what they do, but it's also branding. So to them, in a more twisted way of trying to rationalize how much they use social media, it's almost a job to them.
How many followers do you think Odell has? I don't know, it's a couple million maybe? I mean, that's a huge audience.
I think he has
some great content he just fed
minimum.
The beast.
He has a minimum million.
But I look at the guy who's the poster boy for being this party animal, so cool, and his name's Rob Gronkowski, right? Mm-hmm. And he just got Instagram, a year ago? Well, he never even had it. It was like a huge deal when they started letting him do videos that are longer than 15 seconds. That was like with Gronk getting Instagram. He doesn't post things of him partying.
Not during the season.
But it's never him that's doing it. It's people that
onlookers.
He's with.
Yeah,
you're right.
He's not promoting his brand. His brand, you know, like Gronk, I mean, look how tall he is and how big he is. He stands out. Mm-hmm. He can't get away from that. So if he's partying, you know about it from other means, right? People spot him. He's not going to go out there and start posting that he's doing that on his own because he in season is a different guy. And if he's out there, you know what I'm saying?
And he should be. He should be.
I respect if he – basically, if you can go out there and party till 6 a.m. and show up to work at 7 and you are a rock star, then I'm jealous of you and you have your cake and you eat it too, and that's fantastic. I didn't have a curfew out of high school, but if I got home no matter what time on Saturday night, as long as I was up at 7, I was able to put down and keep a full breakfast in at the table and be in church at 8 a.m. looking normal and great – then more power to me. My dad didn't care and he turned a blind eye. If they can pull that off, that's great. But it's like an unnecessary focus on them and unnecessary not pressure, but no matter what they do in this game, it's going to be scrutinized. Why put yourself in that situation? I would want to protect myself and not have that be the case. If I'm swinging from chandeliers all night on Sunday night because I have a wrap party for DirecTV, you guys aren't, maybe you guys, you three will know about it, but nobody else is going to know about it because I'm not going to post about it.
Okay, can I tell you, hungover church is the worst. I've been to church hungover badly. Mm-hmm. It feels odd because the good Lord is there in the house, and then you feel like you got to go pull the trigger in the bathroom and you're in a church bathroom. I've been there before. I hear you.
You're not blessing that toilet?
No, the porcelain god, right.
I would say this, and you know, Tom Coughlin was the disciplinarian coach, and I don't know if these guys would have tried to get away with this under Coughlin.
You're right.
But is it a get away with? Like, I also get, they did have the time off, so what can Ben McAdoo say, right? What could Tom Coughlin say?
I said this on air, and I guess I was playing a role on air a little bit because I knew how you three felt about this, and I felt like someone needed to take the grumpy old man look, but someone needs to say, hey, let's take the other side of this. And my point is just this. That Miami yacht with the Timberlands and the Trey Songz and the Bieber, that's going to be there February 15th. It's going to be there March 15th. It's going to be there April 15th. And Odell Beckham's not going to be any less cool then.
And if they lose, it'll be there Monday. Yeah, no, I get it.
So why not just wait? I guess you're saying they're exhausted.
Maybe it helps them. Maybe it does revitalize them, and it's what they need. They're like, oh, it's the end of the season. No matter what happens,
it's not a bye week.
You
have a game.
I always picture, like, okay, so we talked about how this went down. Maybe going into that Redskins game, somebody says, hey, I got a jet. I got a friend with a boat. We can do it. You want to come on this jet with me? We'll be back in time for work. You in? Yeah. I mean, why not?
Well,
let's do it.
I want to bring this up to Nate because I spoke to Nate about a year ago before we even had the show, and I knew Nate was a teammate with Manziel, and Manziel obviously has his problems, and they're demons, so we're not going to trivialize that.
Right.
But I said to Nate, I said, you were a teammate with Manziel. Were you ever pulling him aside and say, hey, dude, what are you doing? And your answer was no.
No, he's a grown man. Listen, Johnny would, while we were in Cleveland together, as soon as we would get done on a Thursday or Friday and have a two-day weekend, three-day weekend, he would hustle right out the facility. And, you know, you would assume maybe first-round draft pick, he'd stay and watch some film. But then I thought to myself, it's summertime. His closest friends are Drake, LeBron, Justin Bieber. Like, so why would he stay in Cleveland when he can be in the NBA Finals, you know, within a jet ride? So, and I realized maybe Johnny didn't need football. Like, we needed it, or I needed it. Here's the thing, Kato. I'm not disagreeing with you. I agree with you 100%. If you're going to do something, don't document it, because then you're giving everybody the ability to really pick at you about every small detail, especially if you fail at something. But what I am saying is that this generation is different. It's what KB's saying. They're just different. They don't think the same. You know,
they don't really think they're sitting there like, ooh, I should probably put this on Snapchat because it'll help build my brand. Like, I don't think they're thinking
that. No, I just feel like they understand the followers are going to
love it.
Yeah, and it's like being a superhero, okay? Like, I've been there on a small level. I've had a 1,000-yard season, walked to the offseason, and, you know, somebody walking up to me every hour, no matter where I'm at in Minnesota, and then going back home in Seattle. And I thought to myself, man, I really got to get control of this because my ego is getting inflated to the point where it's bigger than who I really am.
Yeah.
Now, if you're Odell Beckham, Victor Cruz, and these guys, like I said, aren't athletes. They're rock stars. It's hard not to sit on a boat and look at the sky and say, this is the best life ever. Oh, wait a minute. Let me capture this for the fans. It's hard not to do that. Because every day you're on the stage.
There really
every day.
Is no connection between them going to Miami and what happens on the field this weekend.
We don't know
weekend.
That. We don't know that. What if they come out in their flat?
No,
but that's what I'm saying. There really is no – like, I can be know that right now that there's no connection, but people will draw a connection and connect dots that aren't even there because they can, because they've been giving this ammunition.
It adds pressure to that's all of them. Whether they believe it or not, it adds pressure, and it gives an angry media mob, which is what we are as a media force, not our show, but in general – more fodder and more reason to just attack.
Yeah.
Why do they do that? To Kay's point, I was thinking the same thing. Like, it has no matter what happens in that game, if Odell Beckham drops 10 passes, it has nothing to do with it. Anybody with a brain
that
knows
yacht photo was like a dream for the New York Times.
So use your brain and separate the two. It has nothing to do with
it. It's great fodder. Look at that. They're on a yacht
but it's
posing
nonsense.
Like a boy band.
I love it for today. If the game was today, if they were in the night before the
for
game,
sure.
Oh, yeah. It has nothing
to do
with it.
The same reason that Jessica Simpson, Tony Romo, and Jason Witten and Cabo sold. It was a photo of celebrities.
So tell me more. I don't remember this very well.
So 2007, the Cowboys were the number one seed. They had an amazing record. They finished the season with a bye. During the bye week, Tony Romo was dating Jessica Simpson.
She's at all the games in the booth. They always shoot Jessica Simpson wear pink number 9
that.
Jersey.
Yeah.
It was
huge.
So Jason Witten and his wife.
Okay,
I loved Jessica
we get
Simpson
it.
At the time.
We get it.
Tony Romo and Jessica Simpson, they fly down to Cabo. They're drinking. They're having a blast. There's photos everywhere. This is during the bye week. They come out the next week to play the Giants at home, and they're all flat. And the Giants upset the world and beat them. And the Dallas media and a lot of people in the media said, well, did you have to go to Cabo on your bye week? Couldn't you just been focusing on the film? Whether it mattered or not, it became a storyline, and it haunted Tony Romo for many, many years. It still is brought up time to time, the Cabo stuff. So this, I'll end it on this. My last comment, you guys can keep going on it, but I just feel like it wasn't necessary. Wait, and I know how fun it was, and they might need a breather or whatever. This wasn't the time for it. I think it just opens up a door for a lot of people to be on the offensive, and I don't think they needed that.
Do they not need it, or do they totally not care? That's my last point. Like, does it?
Do you think Victor Cruz wants a photo of him with his eyes bloodshot on the cover of the New York Post? I wouldn't want that. It's not great for the brand either.
Then don't
do it. You're right. 100%. Don't document it.
Cruz has been around for a while, too. I mean, you know him. He knows better, but yet he still did it.
We'll see what happens this week. All right, let's move along to coaching, right? Let's talk the coaching carousel. Schrager, you've been working so tirelessly
on this, man.
It's just 24/7 what's been going on. It's not really just even this past week. It's a culmination of like years of relationships between coaches and GMs and where they've been in the past 10 or 20 years.
I appreciate you saying that. Black Monday, you might wonder, like, how, you know, what are these? This news is coming for weeks and weeks. And when I do those ones to watch on Fridays, it's a lot of me polling people around the league, like, who are going to be the coaching candidates? I talk to agents of these coaches. I talk to the actual team presidents. Here are the guys to watch. Here's this. Here's that.
And are they pretty forthright with you?
Yes.
Like, okay.
Yeah. Like, I feel like I've built up enough trust with these guys. They're not going to throw me for a loop and say, hey, mention my guy for the sake of it. It would be a nice favor. It's not that. It's more, here are the guys. And then it happens. Sunday night, you get this wave of these news, and it's like, all right, who's on their toes? Who's going to be the one to first report that this guy's coming in for an interview? I've got relationships with the coaches themselves. I've got relationships with general managers. I've got relationships with the agents. So you got to hope that the information's accurate. Now, what's interesting is I don't think the fans at home realize that, and Nate, we had a good conversation about this off air. The coaches' contracts are guaranteed. So Chip Kelly signed a four-year, $29 million deal. He gets fired in year one. So he's going to be paid out $25 million no matter what he does. He's just probably an offset with another NFL job. Probably can't take an NFL head coaching
job. Still getting paid most likely by Philadelphia.
$25 million, and he's still probably getting paid by Philly.
Are you serious, Clark?
That's crazy.
That's guaranteed. That's no matter what. Now, the guys who I sympathize for is, let's say, for example, Chip Kelly on the staff. You know, his quarterback's coach or his assistant quarterback's coach or his wide receiver's coach, because Chip Kelly's going to land on his feet with $25 million. He'll get a job next year. What about the 26-year-old kid who was making $30,000, who was working as a quality control guy?
Right.
He gets fired. Now he's fumbling. What do I do in quick order without an agent? How do I find a job? So they call it Black Monday, yes, because people get fired. But to me, I really get emotional because I know a lot of these assistant coaches, and they lose everything.
And they got families.
And they've got families. They've got kids in school, and they lose it all also. So when you see that Mike McCoy gets fired, they're blowing out the entire coaching staff. It's not just Mike McCoy.
Right.
In a very rare situation, like Lovie Smith last year got fired, but they elevated the offensive coordinator. So a lot of guys kept their jobs. But for
the most
part, A lot
of
casualties. Now, Nate, you said you don't sympathize as much because why?
I don't sympathize as much with the head coaches getting fired. And I hate to sound callous, but as a player, we get released, we get cut, and we don't have the guaranteed money to lean on. And we're scrambling to figure out what our next move is. So I've learned to be callous with players.
It's a great point.
I remember talking to Randy Moss when I was young, and we were just kind of having a casual conversation about, you know, life in the NFL and making friends. And in so many words, he basically said, it's hard for me to make a friend with a guy when I don't know if he's going to be there next week. And I'm thinking to myself, damn, like, that sounds a little exaggerated. I'm a rookie at this point. Now I turn 22, and I really get to taste what the NFL is really about. I understand what he was saying. It's so true. You can't invest emotionally in a guy that might be in the locker next to you, and then he gets cut. Now you're bent out of shape because one of your best friends are going, nah, you have to remain focused and get your ass back on the field and play ball. So when it comes to the coaches, I've learned that not only will they get fired too, but their money's guaranteed. Now, it's the assistant coaches. It's the guys that I have relationships, the guys that help bring me in, the guys I spend the most time with. You don't spend the most time with the head coach. You spend the most time with a Todd Downing, who was my punt returner coach and spent time with me every single day saying, you're going to get your opportunity to be a punt returner. And I'm like, Todd, I don't want to be a punt returner. Todd Downing is the quarterback's coach for Derek Carr and the Oakland Raiders.
Gotcha.
And he coached with Scott Linehan in St. Louis and also Matt Stafford in Detroit. And I remember him coaching me up saying, now you're going to get your opportunity. It might not be with this team, but at some point, you're going to be thrusted into the lineup as a punt returner. A few years later, I'm in Seattle trying to earn my way back on the field as a wide receiver. I become one of the best punt returners in the league. And I remember calling him saying, thank you for spending those days with me that I didn't want to do. That's the guy who I care for when the coach gets fired, because not their money's not always guaranteed. And then on top of that, they have families and new babies and new homes, and they have to uproot and figure it out because they can't sit still. Because in football, if you're a coach and you sit still, you get forgotten, just like a player. They say a year out is tough for you to get back in. 2 years, forget about it. Same thing with coaches. If they want to sit back, relax, and sit at home, there's another young coach that's going to get paid even less, that'll do even more work and sleep over at the facility and earn his way onto the staff. So I'm callous when the head coaches get fired because, one, they have the money. They always land on their feet because they're in that buddy system. And if you're really good at what you do, you don't need the buddy system. You'll get hired because you're talented.
That's what brings to mind for me in Black Monday. I used to be much more naive about this industry. I used to think, oh, coaching, that's so cool. You know, and I was talking to a player who was wrapping up his NFL career with his wife. I was like, so are you going to get into coaching? You'd be great at that. And his wife jumps in. He goes, no way are we getting into coaching. We're not having that lifestyle. It is horrible. I'm not moving my family every year, every 2 years. It's like we were looking, you see these guys on the sideline, Pete Carroll or Bill Belichick, whoever it is, you're like, God, they're like gods. What an amazing. I'd love to be a head coach someday.
That's who I feel bad for, the wives. The kids.
Unbelievable. Yeah. And it's like, and think about that. Okay, so we have, there's a holiday called Black Monday every single year.
The phone's going off, Schrager.
Who's that? Is that an NFL owner with a hot dog report?
By the way, Kyle and I could not be more jealous of the fact that your phone's blowing up left and right with, like, you know,
well, you're on live TV and these guys are watching it saying, wait, what are you saying?
And Peter, to your credit, you try not to be that character you see in NFL media, the guy who's always checking your phone, want to see whose number I have in my phone. You don't do that.
And to his credit, when he hears or sees something wrong, he doesn't jump in and say, that's complete BS. Because oftentimes, Schrager either knows what's about to happen,
right,
or he has some information he's privy to that he doesn't realize.
It's 100% straight.
I'm very humble.
But you've been on fire. No, I think the point I was making was that for the family, there's a holiday every year where people just get fired.
Celebrate you getting fired.
Yeah, I mean, if you are a doctor or a dentist or whatnot, and there's Black Monday everywhere where half the dentists get
imagine
fired.
Imagine there's a show called The Aftermath about your
yes,
career.
Yes, Aftermath. All, you know, the local realtors have gotten fired.
All the teachers.
Now they have to move. Yeah. So you look at the coaches, and of course, they're very well compensated, the high-up guys.
Yeah.
But those low-end guys, maybe you have a 26-year-old who is on Chip Kelly's staff who wants to propose to his wife, and they live in the Bay Area, and her family's there, and it's perfect. We got a new head coach. They're going to be here for years. No, now you got to move, and you got a job in South Carolina,
And if
we got to move there. It's horrible.
And if Chip takes a year off next year and says, I don't want to do it, or
then
Chip wants to go to TV,
do?
He's not taking you with you. So, all right. So here's where it gets interesting, though. You've also got all these dynamics, and I know Kay loves that. I love this, the Melrose Place stuff, of personal relationships where this guy knows this guy. This guy knows this guy. A lot of times it's nepotism. It's I feel comfortable. This guy's not going to threaten me. So a lot of times these owners and presidents are hiring coaches that might not be the best coach, but might be the least threatening coach or the guy that might work the best with a star player.
Or someone you can attach strings to and play a little bit of puppet master. I'm not saying there's some puppets out there, but you can control just a little bit and have some influence on these coaches. I know exactly what you're saying.
So there's a bunch of guys out there, and I think it's interesting. So, like, for example, we talked on our show about a guy named Sean McVay who's 30 years old. I think I like the characters, right? So I know Sean. It's not like I'm pumping up his tires or anything. He's going to get this on his own merit. I like the story of Sean McVay because he's 30 years old, and I think our show's a pretty young show.
Why is he such a badass, in your opinion? Like, what about at the age of 30? What has he earned at the age of 30?
2008, he was with John Gruden in the Buccaneers. John Gruden loses his job. He goes and coaches at the United Football League, the Florida Tuskers. And then he goes with Jay Gruden, and him and Jay Gruden go, and he actually was the assistant tight ends coach of the Redskins, the tight ends coach, then the offensive coordinator, and this year called all the plays. So, like, he's done that progression.
Does that guy have a family? Does he have a fiance or girlfriend or anything? Does he? I'm interested.
Sean is as I know, Sean is single, no kids.
Let's see, of course.
Badass.
That's awesome.
Badass. Now, he also, his grandfather was also the general manager of the 49ers for many years, John McVay, who was with Bill Walsh. So there's like a football lineage there. And I find him interesting as just an archetype, right? Like, here's a 30-year-old guy. And then on the other end, you've got Mike Smith, who's 57 years old.
Right.
Or Coughlin taking me.
Or Coughlin at 71.
Marv Levy.
Or Marv Levy saying, I'm in at 91. That's, to me, Kay, what's so fascinating. You've got a guy like Steve Wilks, who's a name that no one had heard of until we did the Ones to Watch, really, on our show. You know, he's in his late 40s, African-American defensive backs coach in Carolina. He's not the defensive coordinator. He's not the head coach. He's the defensive backs coach in Carolina. He's getting head coaching job interviews because of how much players love him and what he did with Josh Norman and all those guys. Like, merit matters. It's a meritocracy, and at the end of the day, the best coach will get it. My favorite story of all is the Steelers. Bill Cowher retires, right? Everyone's looking. Who's going to be the next one? They had a guy, Russ Grimm, who was the assistant head coach. He was like the offensive line for years for the Steelers.
He might be the best gig in the NFL.
Redskins legendary offensive line coach. Everyone thought it was a no-brainer. Russ Grimm was going to do it. But they wanted to meet other people. So let's bring other guys. A 34-year-old defensive back coach who was in Minnesota the year before, an irrelevant Vikings team, and the Buccaneers before that walks in and wins the interview, and they're like, you know what? Let's go young. Let's hire this guy. No one's ever heard of him. Let's hire Mike Tomlin. And then Mike Tomlin gets the job, and he hasn't given it up since.
The whole league, everybody's like, what?
Who?
Mike? Who?
Played at William & Mary?
He played at William & Mary.
He's just as young as he's just as old as his
An assistant defensive backs coach. Yeah. You know, so that's what's fascinating about all this thing. So when you see all these names come out, and I mentioned Mike Smith because he's 57 years old. He's been a head coach already. He took a year off, worked for the league for a year, and then comes back and he's just like rejuvenated Mike Smith. He was a defensive coordinator of the Buccaneers. The fact that
maybe he went down to Miami, you just didn't.
He might have gone to a yacht. The fact that Mike Smith is in the same conversation as Sean McVay at 30, who's single, who's got like, you know, the look and everything.
Any of the candidates reach out to you and say, "What are you hearing?"
Yeah, of course.
So they're like, "Who else is up for this
job?" Yes. And what do you think they want to hear? Like, what would be your advice? And I'm not getting paid on anything. I'm not a consultant. I'm not an agent. They see me on television every day talking about this. They see me at the games on Fox, so they think that I know something. I'll give them honest assessments on what I think they might want to hear, but I have no real say.
Is there a trend this year? I remember at some point during the season we were doing ones to watch. You said you were taking a stance just to take a stance, but you said go younger. Like, there's all these young guys, young Einsteins coming in. Is that still what you think the trend is for this
season? I think Josh McDaniels and Kyle Shanahan are two very hot prospects now. I know we're going to go on to other topics, but I just wanted – the Kyle thing is interesting. So Nate played for Kyle Shanahan. He's 38 years old. He's the offensive coordinator in Atlanta – 36, actually, in Atlanta. Young guy, bright mind. He's got a father, Mike Shanahan, who was the head coach of the Denver Broncos, then the head coach of the Washington Redskins. Did not end pretty in Washington with Robert Griffin and Donovan McNabb. It was really ugly. And Mike isn't out of the picture yet. He's not working for anybody right now, but he came on Colin Cowherd's show a week ago and was like, "I'd love to be a consultant for Kyle." Like, Kyle on his own merit – is great, and a lot of places would be like welcoming to Mike Shanahan. He's got years of experience, and he's a brilliant football mind. Other places might be like, "We don't want Mike Shanahan. We want Kyle Shanahan." So this is a fascinating interdramatics of all that
so
as well.
There could be some teams worried about helicopter dad.
I wouldn't even say helicopter dad. I would say
that one parent at the soccer game that's just breathing down the soccer coach's
neck. And Kyle, to his
put
credit,
my son in.
Kyle, to his credit, was you know, he went to Houston without Mike Shanahan. He went to Cleveland without Mike Shanahan. He's coaching in Atlanta for the last 2 years without Mike Shanahan, and yet there's this presence of people fearing his father somehow playing a role. It is like high school. It's
stage mom. Let me say something about Kyle. I only spent a small amount of time with him in Cleveland before they released me. I walked to his office. He got the Air Force Ones on, unlaced, baggy shorts. If I didn't know him, I would think he was just another player on the squad. He talked to me real casual. Yeah. Laid back in his seat halfway reclined. He's like, "Hey, look, Nate, listen, we just got to get these young guys on board. And if they listen to me, I promise you, just listen to me. If they listen to me, this offense will get rolling. I know my offense works." And it's like a casual conversation I would have with one of my homeboys. And I looked at him and was like, "Damn, I believe." And then you fast forward, he wants out of Cleveland. He's under contract. He gets out of Cleveland by himself, which is crazy. We don't talk about that often. Coaches don't usually just walk out the door without something happening.
What did he do?
He had another couple of years on his Cleveland deal, and he went to them, and Mike Pettine was the head coach. They weren't seeing eye to eye, and he basically said, "Just let me out of my deal. I don't need to be paid out. Just let me out." And they said, "Well, you're under contract." He's like, "I'm willing to go and make no money.
I'm not going to cause a fuss.
I'm not going to cause a fuss. Just fire me. Like, get rid of me."
Players betting on themselves.
And sure enough, Atlanta within minutes was like, "Yeah, we'll take you."
That's a gangster move right there.
So I have to ask you guys, because Nate, you obviously, we know you were in the league a long time, but Kyle, you also played 4 years of college football. Yeah. You were a running back. Uh-huh. So my question is about coaches. Like, when I watched Gary Kubiak yesterday, I got emotional watching it.
How often
do you see that side? Do you only see like the, you know, not the militant, but the, you know, the hardcore coaching side? How often in your, I guess, past do you see, not maybe not the tears, but the choked upness? I would assume it's quite a bit, just because it's such an emotionally charged roller coaster game, right?
All the time. I mean, Nate, you play with a lot of guys. I saw all the time. The thing we used to have is we'd have this one, a linebacker coach, a coach lifer, 40 years. And his name was Don Dobes, and he recruited me to come to Princeton. And before every single game, there's always a period, I don't care what level of football it is, if it's junior high or if it's the Super Bowl, there's always a period of that 10 minutes before you go out.
Yeah.
You know, and you're with your teammates, and you're in the pads. And you know,
it's the height of emotion.
Right. And it's saying, all right, everybody out at 3:15. What about 3:05? It's written on the marker board. 3:15, everybody's out. So about 3:05, like, the barkers start barking. There's always like four or five of them in every team.
Wild animals.
Usually it's like a middle linebacker, or sometimes, like in your case, D-line, it's a wide receiver. Right, and it's the guys who start saying stuff like, let's go. This is our day.
It's our house.
And so Don Dobes, my linebacker coach, he would stand on the sideline and watch the whole room. And as the guys started screaming and the guys started getting emotional, he would just sob. He would stand in the corner and his shoulders would shake. This is a guy who's been sob because he looked at us as like his sons, and he coached us so hard, and he recruited many of us, and we knew the risk we're putting our bodies in. And he would always look up, and then he'd put his sunglasses on to try to hide it. But by the time we were seniors, we'd be like, yo, check out Coach Dopes. And he was always sobbing. Huh. Just the emotion of it. And
you'd go to war for that guy.
To war. And I always would make sure to look at him before we went out, because the fact that Coach Dopes was crying meant so much to him. And this is his life. And he's a made guy. He's got his money. He's got locked in. But he cared so much about us. And he's been through so many recruiting classes, yet he's still crying. So it's funny, because you think after the game, or when you lose, or when you win. But before the game, there's so much emotion, too, that was almost unprecedented. So the Kubiak, obviously, I get. He's been to the mountaintop with these guys. Yeah. He's a lifer. He played quarterback, and now he's walking away from the game. Extremely emotional. I've seen it a lot, and you think it's not rare. You just don't see it that much at the press conference.
Yeah. So me, I spend a majority of my time in that emotional space, because I felt like that was the one way I can always ensure that I gave, like, everything to the game, my complete heart, my complete soul, and get lost in the moment. And I think it all kind of came full circle when I got released by Detroit. It was my final year. I was going into the last year of my deal, and I went in, I was dapping up all the coaches, and every single coach had like a small story. Linehan was saying, you know, the first time I saw Calvin Johnson show emotion was your second year here, and you were with him. And the head coach, Jim Schwartz, saying, I appreciate it. Every time I needed you to get the defense going, you were willing to put yourself on the line, get in a fight, just to make sure practice went in the right direction. And then I was talking to Kyle Valero, who is now the assistant wide receivers coach with the Dallas Cowboys. And Kyle said, hey, Nate, man, I'm going to miss you. I'm going to miss a lot of stuff you do. I'm going to miss the pregame speeches. I'm going to miss the zip them ups. I'm going to miss all the stuff that you did and talked about and came from the heart. But the one thing that will always stand out is your pregame. And it's the exact moment that Kyle's talking about right before you go on the field. And I was like, what are you talking about? He said, well, you spend the whole morning of the game getting everybody else hyped. Like, I know you took the responsibility of doing that. But then right before you went out, you would get in your headphones and you play certain songs you played. And you would kind of disappear. Like, you'd be in the middle of the locker room, but nobody else would be there. It'd be just, you know, I'm like, how did you know that? He said, because like halfway through the song, you would get goosebumps. He said, I would watch you every single time. You never knew I was watching you. He said, I would see your eyes get watery, and then my eyes would get watery, and I realized, like, once you did that, once you got goosebumps, I would get goosebumps, and I knew that our team was ready. And I was like, that's crazy. I didn't know he did that. But that was me. Right before the game, I lock out, and I just almost envisioned myself being on stage alone. Like, okay, I gave everybody else everything. Now it's time to get yourself going. And that was me. So when I was able to give that to the team, I got that from the coaches. And I think every single coach, Jim Moore Jr., Mike Tice, Linehan,
Jim Schwartz,
everybody, even Patton for that small, he was the emotional guy. The only guy that wasn't overly emotional was Mike Holmgren. And I think I talked about it a little bit ago. He didn't necessarily want me in Seattle.
Right.
He's very hard on me. And I probably was that one guy that came from Minnesota and didn't do things the way he wanted. So I had some adjusting to do. And I just thought, man, this guy hates me. And for a while, I had this like almost like strained relationship with him. Fast forward, me being in Detroit, we're playing against Cleveland. He was GM there. One of the guys come in and say, hey, Mike Holmgren wants to talk to you. I'm like, what? I'm like, he's the GM. What does he do on the sideline? He's like, oh, he hurt his leg. So he's like in a scooter, but he wants to talk to you. So I'm like, what? So I go down, and Holmgren's like, hey, I just want to tell you I really appreciate what you're doing in Detroit. He said, you know, since you left Seattle, you've been a tremendous leader. You've been one of the guys that I've always kept on, and I enjoyed coaching you. And it was a weird moment because I never got
a warm and fuzzy moment with him.
Never. And I, you know, I got a father. So I don't have that, you know, I need a man's approval. But in that moment, it was like a father that never paid attention to him saying, I see you. And I dapped him up, and he was just like, just good luck with the rest of your career. And like, that meant the world to me, mm-hmm. you know, because I thought to myself, it wasn't that he wasn't emotional. He was just an old school coach. So his approach was differently. Maybe he was emotional. It's just that his delivery wasn't the same as my other coaches.
I would just say, you know, the press conference, that was a great story. Rex, you know, is boisterous in the press conference, and Adam Gase has this intense look, and you see Nick Saban.
Okay, look at Belichick, and I'm like, if he decides to resign, am I going to get the Kubiak treatment out of him that I saw yesterday? Probably not, right?
Yeah, and I was going to say, like, and that's a great point. Jim Caldwell and Tony Dungy are two of the most respected and beloved coaches, and players go to war for those guys, and they're the nicest. So every coach has a different style. Jim Caldwell I'm told, can be a real fire plug, can be a real spark, like can get in guys' heads.
Right.
And you see him on the sidelines, it looks like, is there anyone home? So, yeah. I mean, it doesn't.
You talked about Adam Gase today.
But we've seen Adam Gase.
Kyle loves himself some Adam Gase. You want to see the real true Hollywood story?
He is a bulldog.
I don't know much about him.
He lights into these guys. So, like, Adam Gase, when they, you know, he didn't bring Jay Ajayi week one because he wasn't happy with it. Like, jobs are on the line. There's always high stakes. I would say this, not knowing what's going on in Adam's head right now leading into this playoff game. Everyone's talking about the Steelers. I bet you those Dolphins players are petrified of Wednesday practice for how they played on Sunday still. Like, they're going to show up, and it's not going to be
that. That is so college.
But this team has
done
so much adversity every step of the way. He, so many injuries. Then you have Matt Moore come in, and Adam, I mean, Adam.
I wouldn't be shocked. Look,
all I know about him is that Cutler was great on Sunday when he was in Chicago.
I wouldn't be shocked.
Don't do
Forget
it.
Forget the upset. I wouldn't be shocked if Gase cut a couple guys this week based on how they played on Sunday. That was such an egg, and I did not expect it from the Dolphins against the Patriots. Knowing what they have done all season, it's been, you got to be held accountable. I can't imagine him just saying, yeah, well, who cares? It was week 17. I bet you he's pissed.
What's that guy, Lippett?
Well, the
guy
who got declared. Let's look ahead to wild card weekend and start with Dolphins at Steelers. I mean, any chance the Steelers lose this game, guys?
Yeah, there's a chance. I mean, just run off the heels of what Peter was saying. Like, Adam Gase is going to have these guys fired up. Don't be surprised if Miami comes out and hits the Steelers in the mouth. This is a heavyweight belt. And if I'm, you know, having an understanding of what Adam Gase is like, he's probably going in, taking every piece of bulletin board material, everything that we're saying on TV, all the hype about the Steelers, and saying, listen, do you guys hear this? Like, you guys made the damn playoffs. Like, you guys have earned this right just like everybody else. So what are you going to do about it? You tell your guys that enough for the next 3 days, they're going to be pissed off by the time they walk on the field. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Steelers jump out to a good start. I mean, the Dolphins jump out to a good start, but, you know, also have faith in the Steelers because they have so much talent on the field.
I can't even – they're going to – I got to give it to the Steelers.
Yeah.
We talked about that report.
Too many weapons.
No, they do. I love the report I mentioned on the show today that I was watching Total Access and Aditi Kinkabwala was reporting live. She's on NFL Network from the Steelers. And
we love her.
We love Aditi.
Girl crush.
She's great. She's so good on TV. Such a cool name. Yeah. And she was asked by the anchor, I hear a few of the Steelers, they wanted the Dolphins because of the way it went. She goes, no. They all wanted the Dolphins because you're the Pittsburgh Steelers, the terrible towel, the steel curtain. No one's supposed to hang 200 yards rushing
through.
On you. Can't do that. That is the brand.
A terrible
of the
paper
company.
Towel. That's
you
what
got
it was.
They ran through. So they're like, we got to get this to like redeem our manhood, whatever the hell you want to call it. They wanted them. They got them. Now don't get run over again.
Yeah.
All right, let's go back to Saturday. Raiders at Texans. Is there an X factor? Anything you guys are particularly watching
this game on Saturday? This game's a dog.
Yeah, but see, I like it. It's different.
No, you don't.
Why do you love wild card weekend so much?
KB, I'm with you.
It's a great question.
Because of the wild card possibility?
Well, no, first of all, I like it because I can watch NFL football on Saturday and drink and be hungover on Sunday. That's just the superficial level for a fan.
Don't you take a photo.
No, I won't take a photo.
Get on your
I don't do that. You know what? My New Year's resolution
don't
is to tweet a lot.
Puppy filter on Saturday.
The puppy filter. No, no. No, but I like watching NFL football on Saturday. I don't care what it is. And we've talked ad nauseum about Bengal Christmas, and it's over this year, but we still have that Texans Saturday afternoon game. I like something different. I like to you know, we're going to get to the Giants and the Packers on Sunday. It's probably going to be great. But the idea of watching this, I'll just say it, this shitstorm of these who the hell are these guys quarterbacks being played in a playoff game.
I know.
Now, this seems like a preseason game where you have to Google the guy and he's trying to make the last cut. I just think, look, I don't think it's going to be a great game. I think it's going to be 13-9. But I'm tuning in. All these people are like, this is the worst game ever. I'm not watching it. Yes, you are.
Yeah, you are.
If you watch Ryan Lindley versus Cam Newton a couple years ago, and if you watch T.J. Yates a few years ago,
you're watching this one. And it's almost like it's not a half measure. You say give us an A or an F. It's not the backup. It's like the backup's backup. Right. They're giving us an F on the roster. But I'm very excited for this game just because it's going to be so odd.
I love the unknown. I'm with KB. I don't know what to expect from this game. I don't know what to expect from these quarterbacks. And this is a position that two guys are going to be in that could be – the biggest game of their lifetime.
They're just going to run the ball.
Maybe they do, but run over Denver.
I get what you're saying.
You can't run the ball the whole game. At some point, they got to drop back and throw it. And guess what?
Look, McGoin got hurt.
That's going to be so exciting. Right. When he drops back and throws the ball, whether it's McGoin, Cook.
I think Cook's going to hopefully
Savage,
get his running back.
Osweiler. Like, I'm excited to see the guy drop back, and I want to know how the ball's delivered. If it's going to hit the target, like, what's going to happen after that?
Me too.
Connor Cook was 35-4 at Michigan State. He was a 4-year starter. I do the draft stuff for Fox, and I had a lot of people in my ear being like, Connor Cook might be a late first-round pick. Now, Connor Cook had what you mentioned, and I'm going to say it like it is. He had a helicopter dad involved with the whole thing, and he was kind of a punk in some of these meetings.
Was
with
his dad
teams.
On Twitter? I feel like
dad
I'm
was on Twitter.
That.
That dad was
bad.
Tweeting a lot. Now that was yeah. one thing. He was also, and Cook came to these meetings and apparently thought he was big man on campus. With a lot of these teams, he rubbed people the wrong way. He's gotten to Oakland. I talked to the people in Oakland. He's been nothing but a great third string quarterback. Now he's never played with the first stringers during
As
practice.
Donald Penn told everybody. Right.
He's never played, so there's not a comfort there, but. He's won Big Ten championship games. He's beaten Iowa when everyone was on Iowa. He's beaten Wisconsin when everyone was on Wisconsin. Connor Cook is a winner in big stage games, and I wouldn't be shocked if he showed up and made a couple plays in this one.
Like, what's DeAndre Hopkins going to look like in this one? Is all I keep thinking about with Osweiler.
Remember
back.
DeAndre Hopkins? Is he still in the league?
He's had a couple good games recently with Savage, right?
I wish I loved anything in life as much as Brock Osweiler liked throwing to C.J. Fedorowicz. I mean, just anything. 30
that might be
targets
the X factor
a game.
There.
It's true.
Polish last name. How about Lions Seahawks? Burleson Bowl.
This is the most exciting game, I think, out of the weekend because you got two quarterbacks that are elite and have done some good things this year. But to be honest, if they're animals, you're talking about a lion and a Seahawk, they're both wounded animals. Mm-hmm. You look at what they've lost this year and what they can't do, specifically the running game. They got some talent at the wide receiver position. Doug Baldwin, he can break off a 180 game like it's nothing. Jimmy Graham is going to make a big play. Marvin Jones, sometimes he's great, sometimes he's just there.
Who showed up, Mufasa or Rawr! Nala,
Nate,
Simba?
Do they even have a shot in this one?
I believe they do. And
I do too.
It's for me, it's who's going to show up in Seattle, what Seattle team is going to show up. Because I feel like we're still waiting. We're still waiting for this dominant Seattle team to show up like we've been waiting all year.
But you've said it. You said if they don't show up, we know they are what they are.
They are what they are. So if we're waiting for this dominant, you're saying, do they have a shot? Are we giving the 12th man that much power that the fans are going to beat the Lions?
Kyle said it on our Good Morning Football show today. 9 playoff wins at home in a row. Russell and Pete have never lost a playoff game at home. Yeah, I am. And okay. I don't think the Lions, I might be wrong, I think it's been since like 57.
And you're Mr. Lion. You're Mr. Lion.
It's been since like Bobby Lane was the quarterback since they won a road playoff game.
This is the hardest one. This will be the closest game.
But neither team.
Lions Seahawks?
I have no idea who I would think would
Neither
would
team can run the ball.
So funny because I think I might be a blowout.
Really?
Yeah, like I feel like the Seahawks could win by 4 touchdowns.
It could
get ugly.
They could, and they could.
Here's I just feel like they got their backs broken last week. They got their backs broken. It was Mufasa falling into the wildebeest. And now they got to get up, and they got to climb back
3
up.
3 weeks
what about
in a row.
Seahawks, home or not home, they're still a big roller coaster.
They are. I mean, they're middle of the third on defense, just
the
like
ball.
The Lions.
The last time they were home, they lost to the Cardinals. We're playing for nothing.
Pete Carroll's been in a lot of big games. He's played a lot better opponents than these Lions. I hope the Lions give it a shot. I think they could get blown out in this one. That's the only game I see that could be a blowout.
And then the main event, Kay, Giants-Packers.
I don't think it's going to be a blowout.
Game of the week, guys. Giants-Packers, I think.
I think it's exciting because the most
I want them both in. I don't want to watch.
Well, the main
game.
Event is the Kay Adams blind item that's coming up. I think we all know that.
You guys talk while I think of what's going to be.
I think we've talked about it enough, and if you're listening, you've done enough analysis of this game. I would just say that the winner goes to Dallas most likely, unless Seattle drops the ball. The winner goes to Dallas. To me, this is a fun run for either Eli or Aaron Rodgers, a fun 2-week span of win this one, and then you go into the belly of the beast where all of America has been waiting for this Cowboys team to be crowned. You got to get past this one first, but this is like the this is like the appetizer to the entree of that game, and then you got to win the NFC Championship.
I'll get some flack for this, but the Giants win this game, they'll lose to Dallas. It's hard to beat a team 3 times in a row. And I know everybody says, they got the recipe and they got the blueprint to beat the Cowboys. No, the Cowboys will be ready, and I feel like they'll play their best game and they'll beat the Giants. Packers go in to Jerry's World.
Yeah.
I believe Aaron Rodgers can spoil their season.
Sure.
That's the outcome of this game. So I don't know how this game is going to turn out. I'm more concerned with the winner and that winner going into Jerry's World. And
Peter, you did the best hypothetical on the air. Okay, if you are a Cowboys fan, it's been a dream season. Yep. This is Hollywood. We got all these cool rookies, and the coach is working, and everything's working. Who do you want to see come into your house, Jerry? Well, do you want to see Eli who's beaten you twice, or do you want to see crazy, crazy Aaron Rodgers?
See Eli because he probably can't win 3 times, like you said.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I, that's my opinion.
Your
that's
dream opinion. Is that Matt Stafford finds a way to beat Russell Wilson, and then you get Matt Stafford. Now, if that's not happening, I mean, Aaron Rodgers is so
Is that the dream, though? Because
Matt
Stafford
almost
beat them last year.
Your dream is to be Tom Brady, who gets to watch the NFC beat itself
Don't say
up
he didn't
and
have a
injure
chance.
Itself. And
Brady's laughing right
come
now.
Into Foxborough.
Wait, Connor who? Who is this guy going to be playing in Foxborough? Yeah. What? You know, Brady does that handsome man laugh.
Oh, that's Nate's fake laugh.
Yeah, Tim looking at the AFC playoffs.
Well, great stuff, guys.
Blind item time, Kay.
There's your
blind
yeah.
item.
Let me think here. Okay, so I got
Should we explain
yeah.
what the blind item is?
You okay, you got 30 more seconds to think about.
I think
okay,
I got one.
So
I'm
we've done this
really
now four times. This is chapter 4 of 4, where one of us tells a story
Are
about.
Are we
gonna
do this again though? Because I have to. Should I take?
Use the best one you got. Whatever you got.
Yeah,
okay?
We'll probably go around. I've horn. In
so
six
you think
weeks.
One of us has a run-in with a celebrity of any walk of life, and there's a story we have about them. We never reveal who the celebrity is, yeah. who we ran into. But sometimes the story is not very flattering. Sometimes it's entertaining.
Yeah.
Very, very quickly, I ran into a quarterback who was going on to a TV show I used to work on, who was really hammered and admitted to me. Nate was offered booze by
offered
teammates
booze by a coach and.
Can't wait for you to explain.
Yes, and then Peter ran into an athlete, a former professional athlete, who he was in the next hotel room from this former professional athlete and heard him having a hell
an
of a
all-night fracas.
An all-night fracas proving the Big Bang Theory. And that brings us to Kay.
Yeah,
what
I'll
do you got?
Go really old school when I was young and reckless and running around. I went to a concert at, what is it called, Jones Beach?
Yeah, Jones Beach.
I didn't even live in New York or anywhere near
what
New
concert?
York. I can't tell you.
There's obviously. No alcohol.
Oh, it's about the, okay,
yes.
I thought maybe
no
it was
alcohol
you were
served
with.
At Jones Beach. By okay. the way.
Really? I was very drunk. I don't know what you're talking about.
I thought
about.
It was about who you were with.
No,
this
no,
is
no.
Great.
So I'm sitting on the lawn. I don't know who the group was. I don't know. It was like a bunch of different bands performing.
The
so
Bare
like,
Naked Ladies.
Whatever it was, I was like, I don't even know what this is. I'm here for the good time. I was there with my friends Mona and Lisa. And they're twins.
You're
Mona.
With the Mona Lisa. Get out of here.
Mona and Lisa are twins. Those
Stop.
Are two. Everyone's like,
I got
what?
Friends named Pablo
Mona
and Picasso.
And Lisa.
Yeah, they're awesome.
They're on next week.
Search them on Instagram right now.
Yeah. You got to go by Lisa and Mona.
So we're sitting on the
it's
lawn.
Weird about them. They never smile. It's like they're almost smiling.
No, they're always smiling. They're wonderful.
You don't know which way they're looking.
So we're sitting on the lawn, minding our own business, having a great time. And all of a sudden, like a guy comes up to us. He's got the headset. Like, you know, he's like part of the crew. And he's like, hey, girls, want to come backstage?
Yes.
And we're like,
okay.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And so he's like, yeah, meet me over here, whatever. We go back. I have no idea where how he found us or whatever. I was like too young to even understand like that was the thing that people do at concerts and, you know, get girls backstage, whatever. So
what
we go,
year is this, Kay?
I'm not telling you. So we go backstage, and this guy like leaves us by where all the tour buses are, and he's like, I'll be right back. I don't know what he was doing or whatever. Gave us a bottle of Jack Daniels and was like, hold on to this, I'll be back. And we're like, what's happening?
I love your story.
We run away. I don't know why I'm even telling this. We run away because I'm like, I'm not waiting for this loser like audio guy. Yeah. What is this? We go and we're running around backstage.
Keep
find
the
ourselves, of course, take the bottle with us. It's the three of us. We find ourselves in like a back room, backstage, whatever. There's like a couple people in there. We just were like, act like you've been here, act like you've been here. All of a sudden, a guy walks in.
Okay.
He's wearing like a pink shirt. That's all I remember with a pattern on it. Older gentleman.
Lenny Kravitz.
He's you know, he sits Scott down
Stapp.
With us. He just talked
Scott
and we're
Stapp.
Like, we could tell he was a big deal, but didn't know who it was. And we start like taking shots of Jack Daniels with him. I think he thinks we're like the makeup people.
Uh-huh.
We're talking to him like we're the makeup people. I have no idea. Not even like I'm trying to put together context clues of like who this guy is. He ends up like going on and performing. We watch him from the from the side for a second and then like go back to the lawn. So that was it. So I like hung out with this guy for like an hour. I'm not gonna tell you who it was.
But, okay.
Nate,
I feel like there's got to be more.
No, that's it. I will tell you that Nate would never know who this person was.
Oh, so he's
okay,
a,
so
a
rock
a
and
white,
roll.
White rock and rolls.
Right.
Rock star.
You got
and he's on a ticket with other guys, so it's not a huge band. It's like a.
You
he's
think,
on a ticket
I think
with
he's
other
a huge name.
Though. He's a big name, a lead singer of a band.
But we probably, for an hour, like, he was out of his mind talking to us about, being on tour and whatever. And we're like, yeah. I mean, he like barely asked us who we were, what we were doing there. We, like,
Man,
kicked
this,
it. And
this Chad Kroeger from Nickelback.
Oh, I know, right?
I remember Mona and Lisa like taking like pears and apples and putting it in their purses.
Oh, like, right, free pears.
Pear. Does he have a song called "Living on a Prayer"?
He does not, in fact, have a song called "Living on a Prayer." There's
does
my
does he have a song "Stealing a Pear"?
No. Nope.
Oh, that should be the song. Okay,
that's
now
it.
The questions have to stop. We're not allowed okay. to question
yeah,
the person.
No,
so one more question. So, what does Mona Lisa look like?
Anyway, that's it. Anybody else have any last minute things to say?
No, I love you guys. I love the show, and I love everyone who's downloading the podcast.
But you give love a bad name, though, Peter.
Oh, okay.
You guys can download us where?
You can find us on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. You can also go to NFL.com/podcast and find us. Hit us up. Let us know what you want us to talk about so we can talk about it.
You can find Nate Burleson at the restaurant Catch in New York City.
Yeah, I double up often.
You do double up.
I like
how many tables there now, Nate? Are you just going to get
busing tables? What are you doing?
The truffle spaghetti. Was it delicious, though, KB?
It killed. It absolutely hit the spot.
Can we make it a regular thing? Like maybe once a month
after
we
the
do
season?
It?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Let's do it. You should be like slowing down on your extra jobs.
She is right there.
You're working your ass off. I need you to like drop one job so you can spend time with your real family, okay? Because I don't like all these extra families you're having these affairs with on TV.
We'll see.
We're the family.
She has other men that she sees, not just us.
We'll see you guys at 7 a.m. Eastern on NFL Network. Love you. Bye.